All right, so for this week's podcast, so this week, because I'm in Japan and we're still trying to figure out how to record long distance and stuff, I thought maybe we could do kind of a shorter little show and do something kind of Japan related, just because I got a couple Japan stories I can tell you, so we can fold it all together into the podcast. So what I was thinking we could do is, one of the things with being in Japan is it's like, oh, there's all these stores and, anime stores and video game stores and all this stuff. But I noticed when I was here in 2019, and the same kind of thing was happening this time, that my taste in anime is just too specific and too unusual. I can't find anything for any show that I like. No merchandise, no nothing. But I finally found something for one of the shows that I like. But just weirdly, it's the only show, like more recent show I've been watching that we've never done on this podcast. Because we watched Nan Nan Biori, which was those kids who live in the countryside. We watched Usagi Drop, that was the kid who the grandfather was looking after the kid, and then the grandfather died, so the grandson looks after her. Yuru Camp, I thought for sure I would find something, because Yuru Camp's pretty recent. And didn't you say you watched the Yuru Camp movie? I guess we can blab about that for a sec. How'd you like it?
It was good. Like these girls are quite grown up in that. Like they're not in school anymore. Have you seen it?
Yeah, I think the thing that cracked me up about it is the Japanese work ethic, because for anyone who hasn't seen it, it's a show about high school girls who start a camping club and go camping. And yeah, the movie, they're out of school, they've started their careers, but then they get an opportunity to convert a plot of land in their hometown into a campground. And the main girl, it's like, it doesn't seem like her job as a journalist is going especially well. So I thought the story was going to be she's going to quit her job and dedicate herself to camping. But of course not. That'd be too easy. The Japanese mindset is, I'll keep my job, I'll take a horrifying commute all the way back to my hometown constantly to make a campground. And I was like, oh yeah, silly me. Only a lazy North American would quit their job to do a second job. In Japan, you do both the jobs.
Yeah, it was interesting. It was well done.
And that one, because that movie only came out last year, I thought, if anything, surely I'll find something. I don't know what, like a t-shirt, a little figurine, a poster. I don't know, anything. There's no evidence that Eurocamp even exists. I mean, it's just the stuff I like is just too, it's just not what's popular. It's all just, because I like those like low key shows that don't have a lot of action or a lot of drama. But I guess they're a niche product even in Japan. But what I finally found, they have these things called gacha machines that are, you put in money and a capsule comes out with like a little toy or a piece of merchandise, but you never know which one you're going to get. It's random. And I finally found one for a show that I like. It's this show called Super Cub. So that's what we're going to watch this week, because we just happen to have not watched that one. But it's a show about a girl who gets a motorcycle, a Super Cub motorcycle, and it's just about that. So your people at home will just have to imagine, but I'll show you. I got a Super Cub keychain. So I don't really need a keychain. Like the place I'm at right now has just got a door code, like I don't know what I'm gonna do with it, but it's small enough that I don't feel bad about buying it. Like I can't buy like a big action figure or something. I don't have any room for it, but I can.
You can fit it in your little one-pack book bag, right?
Yeah, it's just like just a dumb little keepsake of just like, wow, I actually found merchandise for a show that I like for the first time ever. It's never happened before. If only I watched, I don't know, they have. I mean, I guess it's like if someone came to North America, they'd see a lot of like Game of Thrones stuff or I don't know, whatever's popular. But if they were trying to find ALF merchandise, of course they're not going to find it. No one cares anymore. That's the situation I'm in. I'm looking for some weird show that no one cares about. But anyway, I finally found one. So yeah, I thought we could watch an episode of Super Cub. And the way I'm going to tie this in to my Japanese adventures is, so Super Cub, the whole deal with this show is, you remember we were joking about when we were watching Disney stuff that the Disney characters never seem to have parents? They just get rid of them. It's just easier. Just, we don't want to deal with the parents. Get rid of the parents. So this show is very much like that. This girl has no parents and they never explain why. So I just presume maybe they died in a horrible accident and she has like an insurance money or something, because she lives on her own, but she doesn't have a ton of money. and she just doesn't know what she's doing with her life. And then she gets an opportunity to buy a motorcycle. And I like even how they explain that is because she wouldn't normally be able to afford it, but it's a motorcycle that some people died on. And the guy's like, is that okay? And she's like, that's fine. I don't even care. That's fine. So it's just the adventures of her learning how to use a motorcycle. But the thing in this one episode, we're going to watch the first episode. The part of this episode that really stood out to me is she has just gotten this thing. She doesn't really know how it works that well yet. And she drives to a convenience store at night that's farther away than she's ever really gone on foot. And you just get that feeling of what a Japanese convenience store is like at night. It's just pitch black outside and you just feel like it's this little island, but it's just cool because it's a convenience store. But then when she comes out to try to get her motorcycle going, it won't work and she doesn't know why. And just that little, like, that's what I like. Instead of big super drama stories, I like little stuff like that. Like, that's just a tiny problem. But to her, man, that's a big problem. It's, like, embarrassing. She's just like, what's she going to have to do? Like, walk home and then get someone to come pick up the bike the next day and admit that she doesn't know what the heck she's doing, you know? Like, to me, that's more than enough high stakes. And, you know, that's the drama.
It sounds like very realistic drama, the kind of stuff that you really have to deal with in real life. I mean, what are the chances that you're going to go into the convenience store and there's going to be a massive robbery and shoot-ups and villains all around? I mean, that's normally what we think of when we're in the night. But really, yeah, your car won't start, or you've lost your keys, or you can't start your motorcycle. That's realism that everybody can relate to.
And additionally, also, I guess this girl's just such a weird introvert that she also doesn't want to ask for help because that would be too embarrassing, you know? Which, you know, I can relate to a lot of this stuff because I'm just wandering around by myself in Japan, and even just little stuff like I'm not quite sure how this subway station works, or like I go to convenience stores because it's pretty easy, but to go into like a restaurant and just like I can't speak the language, and what if I can't order things? Like, I'd just rather not do it, you know, I'd just rather not put yourself in that embarrassing situation. So yeah, I like that Japan makes TV shows about that type of thing because we certainly wouldn't bother. And it's just so crazy to me that I found, it's like they, wow, merchandise for that weird show. Like, good, I'll take it. But it doesn't exactly relate, but I just thought I'd tell you some weird things that happened to me recently that are kind of similar in the sense that they're not like big deals, but they feel kind of big deal to me because I'm just glad that I managed to navigate these situations and everything went okay because they were so unusual. So I just spent a week in, it's this city called Chiba that's next door to Tokyo. And it's kind of only known as just the other city that's closer to the airport. You know, like even the people who live there that I met said like, yeah, we're not really famous for anything. People just come here because it's easier to get to the airport from here. And that is why I booked it too, because I was on my way here to Fukuoka and it's just easier to get to the airport from Chiba. So I'm like, okay, I'll stop in Chiba for a few days. But the guy who ran the Airbnb I was at was this really nice guy, and he took me to an izakaya, which is like a mom-and-pop pub, basically. So it's this little place we went in that had like three tables, and each table could hold about eight people, and you know, you're just back-to-back with people, you're just packed in there. And all of the, there's no menus, there's just handwritten signs on the walls of all the stuff you can order. So, like, by myself, there's just no chance in hell. Like, how would I ever... I wouldn't even know this place was here. It was like a corrugated steel door you have to slide open, and you go in, and then you got to be able to speak Japanese. And I, you know, I never would have been able to do it. And luckily, I went in and met two of his friends, and one of his friends grew up in America, so his English was excellent. So he, you know, the whole conversation kind of had to flow through the two of us because... Or just really through him, because he's the one who made sure everybody could understand what was going on. But it was just cool because we hung out and I got to try all kinds of stuff I've never had before. Like there were these weird little fish in ground up daikon radish. They grind up the radish, they put all these little fish in it, and they just give it to you as like a mound of tiny fish. I don't even know what they were. I had barbecued eel. I had a tuna head. They just bring the barbecued head of the tuna and you just... use your chopsticks to take bits off, but it was really good. And that was the fun experience. That was the good one where I'm like, oh, cool, you know, what a neat thing. So then also while I was in Chiba, I think because I was feeling more emboldened, because I was like, hey, I actually hung out with some people and did a thing. So this guy just randomly stopped me at this. There's this big park in the middle of Chiba with a big, big lake in the middle. He just randomly stopped me and started trying to get a conversation going. And I thought he was maybe just wanting to practice speaking English, because I heard that sometimes people, maybe they don't do that so much anymore, but they used to back in the day. Like, you just try to find a foreigner to practice your English. So I thought that's what he was doing. And I was like, yeah, you know, and I'm on a roll here of hanging out with Japanese people. So, all right, let's hang out. And basically what I found out it was, is this guy is part of this quite famous Buddhist sect that everybody online calls a cult. Who am I to say? But he basically was just trying to get me to go to his Buddhist cult meeting. But we like hung out and talked for like an hour before that. And he was like a genuinely funny, pretty nice seeming guy. And it was like a combination of, I had nothing else to do. And I didn't want to say no, because he was being so nice to me. So I was like, all right. I'm disappointed that that's what this was about, that you were just trying to rope me into religion. But okay, let's go. So I went to his Buddhist thing, and it was the most boring shit in the whole fucking world. Because, you know, obviously we grew up Catholic. That's what it was like. It was like just the routine and the chanting of Catholicism. But I think it was probably more like when you were a kid, did they do the church in Latin?
Yep. When I was about 10, it switched over to English. But yeah, we were introduced to the Omni Nobisco, blah, 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 blah. Yeah, knew all about it.
Yeah, because I knew you told me about that, but I didn't know if it happened to you exactly or if that was before your time. But yeah, because I mean, Catholic Church was boring enough for me in English. But that's what this, the whole time I was thinking, like, I bet this is what it was like. Just this endless ceremony that will never stop, and you don't know what anyone's saying, because obviously it was all in Japanese.
That's the one, I'll tell you it again, the little story about when it's at the point when the host is being raised to Christ, raised to heaven, and the words are Domino Nobiscum or something like that. Anyway, Denise, who was probably only about 4 or 5 years old at that time, she thought they were saying, do you want some biscuits? Yes, we want some biscuits. And I always felt that was so fitting, because it was just before the host is raised, and then the host is delivered to the congregation. So, do you want some biscuits? Yes, we want some biscuits. And there were other things like that in the Latin Mass that we converted into English, because that's what it sounded like to us, but that's the one that always remains with me.
Yeah, it's nice that one at least makes sense, because the one I had, again, it was English for me, but the one I always misheard was through him, with him, in him, because they'd say it through him, with him, in him, and I always thought they were saying through him with an Indian, because there's a lot of like native stuff that goes on in Canada, and in the 80s we called the natives Indians. So I thought, like, I don't know, maybe the natives are tied into this ancient Roman religion somehow? I don't know. I never knew what that meant. For years, it confused me. And I don't even know how I figured out what they were really saying. It wasn't until I was an adult. But again, yeah, you're just like, whatever you can do just to get through this boring ceremony, right? And in this case, it was extra bad because Japan's full of drink machines. So at all times, I'm filled with coffee in Japan. So this Buddhist chant just kept going on and on and on and on. And I was like, I have to pee so bad. But they brought me into, it was like a room, almost like a rec room, really. But it had a sacred scroll in the front that the guy kept telling me how amazing it was. And it would give me wishes and whatever. But they sat me right at the front. Because, hey, look, I did it. I roped in a foreigner. Like, he was obviously just trying to get points with the congregation. So I just couldn't get up and leave. But I was like, what would be worse? To embarrass him because I got up and left? Or for me to piss my pants because one or the other is going to happen? But I managed to make it. I made it through the whole thing. But yeah, I looked it up later. I can't remember what the thing is called, but it's pretty famous. Online, you can find lots of stories about these guys. And most other people have a worse experience, because if you live in Japan, they try to actually rope you into their religion and get all your info and make you come to meetings. But when they found out that I was just traveling and I wasn't going to be here, they didn't do any of that. They basically just brought me again, just so the guy could get brownie points, I think, because they gave him a weird little certificate after that he tucked away that I can only assume was like the, you did it, you brought a foreigner, nice work certificate. And then, yeah, and that was it. Then they were like, all right, see you later. I felt so used. So yeah, none of that actually relates to Super Cub in any way. It's just that the girl in this show has relatively slight problems that she has to deal with. And I had relatively slight problems in Japan that I managed to deal with. And that's it. That's all. That's the justification. And that I got a Super Cub keychain out of a machine. Those are more than enough reasons to watch Super Cub. So yeah, basically just the real quick nuts and bolts about this show Super Cub. It's kind of neat because it started off, it's like kind of these one of these neat success stories where it started off as just a novel series, and it was just published online. Like the guy just wrote chapters on his website and it gained popularity, so then they published it as a, it's this thing called light novels here in Japan that are kind of like young adult, you know, like light novel as in not a heavy novel, like an easy read, except it's a little different because here, you know, young adult means kind of young adult or for kids, where light novels in Japan, I think it's kind of okay for anyone to read them. It's more just a designation of like, don't worry, you're not going to get too deep with this. It's just like a fun thing to read.
Like our Harlequin romances.
Yeah, except about any kind of different weird topics, you know? I mean, for instance, this one is about a girl who owns a bike.
Yeah.
And then they made a manga version, and then they made this TV show version. Oh, and this is also a neat thing. When I watched this show, I watched it subtitled, but in the meantime, they did an English dub. So I'm like, hey, why not, you know? I mean, I usually find the subtitled versions are a little better for getting a little more of the nuance of what the original was trying to say as much as we can translating it, but it's just easier to watch a dub. So we'll see. We'll see how the dub is, how the English voice acting is. But I thought what I might bring up a little bit, because the show itself is very, like, weirdly deliberately thin. Like, this character has no backstory, no explanation for her circumstances. It's really just an odd little show. Really, kind of the star of the show, more than the characters, is kind of just this motorcycle. So
I was going to say, I bet it's the bike.
Yeah, I was going to say, have you heard of the Honda Super Cub? Are you familiar at all with this motorcycle?
Well, it's just those small little motorcycles that everybody races around in Japan and that on, aren't they?
Yeah, and apparently in America, too. Yeah, like, I just wasn't really, I didn't know anything about it, because I don't know anything about cars until I saw this show. But, yeah, just the real basic thing here is the Honda Super Cub has been in continuous manufacture since 1958, and in 2017, they passed 100 million sold. So that's kind of why the guy started writing this story. It's like a tribute to the Honda Super Cub. And even though they are famous all over the world, obviously Japan does hold these in a special regard. And yeah, I guess it's just like so many people have had this particular motorcycle, and it's like a good starter motorcycle and a nice reliable cycle that they made this whole show about it.
You see them too. If you watch a lot of like European type movies in the, let's say, the 60s and in Britain, the European, you'll oftentimes see them in buzzing around Rome, buzzing around London on those little, they weren't called Super Cubs though. Forget now what they were called. But you see them many, many times, people in their mod clothes with their checkered hats and their capes flying around town on those little bikes. And they're well cushioned, like they've got like a nice front on them, and they're not like a road motorcycle, like a Triumph or anything like that most men would have driven on the open road. They're like little buzz about town bikes.
Yeah, this is, I'm just looking real briefly at some stuff on the Wikipedia page, and yeah, it seems similar to what you're saying. Is like Japan, it was very much this, but then upwardly mobile consumers in post-war Europe typically went from a bicycle to a clip-on engine, then bought a scooter, then a bubble car, and then a small car, and onwards. So this was like part of the chain. But they say that the Super Cub is compared to the Ford Model T, the Volkswagen Beetle, and the Jeep as an icon of 20th century industry and transport. And it is kind of funny watching this show. It almost feels like an ad for Honda, you know, where they're like, man, Honda's the best. And like, you could use any kind of oil, but you should really use the Honda oil because it's the best. But for some reason, it just doesn't bother me in this show because I don't know. Maybe if you have a Honda bike, you should buy Honda oil. I don't know. It seems okay to me. And the other thing that comes up here is, I don't know if you were aware of this at all, but in 1963, starting in 1963 in the U.S., Honda began a 12-year-long advertising campaign, You Meet the Nicest People on a Honda, that apparently was like mega famous, like over a decade. They just kept up with that tagline. Did you ever hear that before?
No, I can't. No, not familiar with that.
Yeah, I think you're probably a little too young, I guess, and probably not giving a shit about motorcycles to know about that. But I bet your brothers would probably know that, whatever.
They might have. But you know what? They were into bigger bikes. Well, we had motorcycles around our yard, but they weren't scooter types. They were the big, big bikes. BMW, not BMWs, that's a car, but Triumphs and just big bikes.
Yeah, that was actually one thing I noticed just today. One reason why I think small stuff is handy in Japan, because everything is small. Like the trucks are small, the vans are small, even construction equipment, you know, like backhoes and tillers and stuff. They're all very small. And today I deliberately walked down a bunch of back streets because the main streets are really busy and loud. And I had to use my Google Maps the whole time. I was constantly getting lost. It was really tough to get down these back streets because they're so small and they're so narrow. And I just realized, like, yeah, that's why all the vehicles are small. If you had a normal sized car, you couldn't even drive in this country. You'd be fucked. So yeah, I guess they also have an extra appreciation for tiny bikes, tiny everything. But all right, I guess that's enough of me yammering on and on. Let's just watch the first episode of Super Cub.
Hokuto, Yamanashi Prefecture. Downhill from Hinoharu Station on the Chuo Main Line, past Koshu Highway, is a long, low incline. I have no parents, no money, no hobbies or anything.
So yeah, as that show goes on, you know, she makes motorcycle friends and does motorcycle stuff. I guess kind of the farthest that it goes is, you know, she gradually increases the distance that she feels comfortable going and whatnot. So I guess like when the cherry blossoms bloom in spring in Japan, you know, it kind of happens in waves. It starts in the south and moves its way north. So they drive really far south to see cherry blossoms before they normally would be able to. So that's kind of technically what happens, quote unquote, in the show. But of course, nothing really happens. So to me, that first episode is the one that I like the best, that I think of the most. Because like, if you showed that show to most people, I think they would just be like, what the f- that is so boring. Like, why would you watch that?
It reminds me, though, of those Eurocamp shows, like the girl that has the scooter who goes around all by herself initially before she meets up with those other girls, and they kind of con her into becoming part of their gang because she's quite content to travel alone and go all these places that you normally wouldn't think of a young girl going.
Yeah, no, I agree. It's very much like that. And yeah, like that part is, again, the part that I was telling you about with the convenience store. I mean, that part runs through my head all the time. Like even just yesterday, I was saying to you how I was hiking in Fukuoka and I had to get off the mountain because I couldn't find a way off and it was getting dark. So I had to hop a fence and I ended up in a golf course and I had to do the walk of shame out the front of the golf course as some guy who clearly just wasn't supposed to be there. You know, just that feeling of like, it's not a big deal. But it's still just like, whew, got away with that one, you know? And that's what that moment in Super Cub, I just always think of that part where she can't get the bike to start. Because, yeah, I just can't really relate to big-time problems, but little problems like that, I mean, that happens all the time.
But in that scene, you wonder, why didn't she just ask that man? He would have been able to tell her about, because men know that stuff, about reserve tanks and how to check your gas, but she didn't.
maybe that's more of like a personality test situation, because I totally understand why she didn't ask. I would never ask, you know, not till I was really desperate, and I probably still wouldn't. I probably just would have walked home and left the bike. Like, it's just horribly embarrassing, because just think of all that insinuates. If you ask him, then he's going to know that you don't know anything about bikes and you drove out there at midnight like a total idiot, you know? Like, it would be so embarrassing, it would be better just to fail in private than to let someone know you made this mistake. So, I mean, I understand. That makes sense to me.
Yeah, but that's usually a man thing. Women usually don't have a problem with asking men how to do mechanical stuff, because men presume women don't know any of that stuff anyway. Even if they do, they just presume that women don't know that anyway, so I'll show off a little bit and show everything I know. But maybe she was nervous about that man. You know, maybe he was just a customer coming out of the store. Maybe she was nervous that he might, I don't know, try to put the makes on her or something.
That is, though, now that you mention it, I mean, that's an interesting wrinkle to this genre, is that most of these are written by men. Eurocamp's written by a man. This is written by a man. Nan Nan Biori's written by a man. But they're all about women. But again, I don't think anyone is trying necessarily to present a realistic portrayal of a woman. It's just that this whole notion of conflict, light, sort of easygoing anime just wouldn't work if the character was a man, you know? So the characters have to be women, but there's certainly no guarantee that anybody writing it has any idea what a woman's really like at all. So I think you kind of nailed something there that is just a quirk of this genre, is that they're always about women, but they're usually written by men. So you get, stuff like that doesn't quite line up. But I just like the idea that, you know, even though I can't relate at all to that specific situation, I don't even have a license. I don't know how to drive. I don't have any interest in even motorcycles. But it's neat that an idiosyncratic situation can feel more relatable, even if the specifics aren't relatable. Because the other thing I thought of when I first saw that episode is one time in like 2008, when I was living in New York, and I was super drunk, and all my friends went home to Brooklyn, but I lived in Queens, and I ended up, suddenly it's like, just like, what just happened? Now I'm all drunk all by myself, and I have to get to the train, and I don't know where anything is, and I don't know how anything works. And it was like 2008, I think the iPhone was out, but I didn't have one. I didn't get a smartphone for years, so I didn't have any maps or anything, and it was late at night. And it was a similar thing of like, I think the subway is this way, you know, and I walked and I did make it and I got to the subway. But that always sticks in my head because my sense of direction is so bad. I literally could have been walking the wrong way. And then what would I have done? Like, that night could have so easily been just me at 3 a.m, completely lost. Just like, what do I do now? Just wait for the sun to come up? Like, you know, so just like situations like that are not a big deal, but a big enough deal that you really hope they don't go wrong, you know? And that's what that outside of that convenience store just reminded me of so much. It's like, it's not the end of the world, but it's just so much more relieving that it all worked out. And it's like, man, I haven't thought about that, like, that feeling in a long time or that moment. And we just don't have shows in North America that are like this. And even in Japan, they hardly do. So, I don't know, just weird. Of all the shows, for me to finally find a gacha machine that I could get merchandise of, I would not have guessed. Again, I thought it was going to be Eurocamp. I wouldn't have guessed Super Cub in a million years. But Super Cub, for whatever reason, is just popular enough that I found Super Cub merchandise in Japan. So it's the winner. It officially wins most. It's apparently the most famous anime that I watch.
So do we want to watch the second one since you have a second one printed?
Hey, if you want to. I mean, I think we could wrap up the podcast here because, spoiler alert, nothing happens in episode 2, nothing happens in episode 3, nothing happens in episode 4. I mean, stuff happens. She meets somebody in this episode. So yeah, it's kind of interesting. She meets somebody else who has a bike who's a lot less of a weirdo than her. So yeah, if you'd like to watch it, why not? I got it all uploaded and ready to roll. Also, I guess one last thing I'll say about that is I feel like that English dub was pretty good. I think English dubbing, I've never seen an English dub for a show this low-key before, And I think it's better, because I think what is tough about English voiceovers is usually anime is quite over the top, you know, it's kind of bombastic. And that over the top acting feels natural in Japanese, but there's no good way for an English voice actor to emulate that because our acting is so much more subdued. But if you have a show that's already subdued, I felt like that was fine. It didn't bother me at all that wasn't subtitled.
No, me either. It was well done.
Oh, also, I guess because you mentioned that the old man at the gas station just had a creepy vibe to him. And I wanted to say, too, I think that's kind of interesting because, again, I feel like in a more conventional story, that would be, that's your fairy godmother, or, you know, or that's your person that shepherds you along in the story, you know, that gets you to your next stage in life. That would be a more inviting figure in North American or European stuff. And I like that in this one, he is just some old, eerie, almost creepy guy who works at the gas station. And you kind of have to infer a lot with this show because it's so sparse. But I get the feeling that, you know, he could kind of clock her in a way. He could tell, like, this kid really wants a motorcycle. And, like, because he sold it for $100. That's ludicrous. It doesn't matter if people died on it. That is way too cheap. That's silly. That was, like, his nice way of being like, I got this bike. No one's going to buy it because people died riding it. I'm basically going to give it to you because I could tell that you need this in your life. But he's not like the nice fairy godmother. He's this weird old guy. And I don't know. I think that's neat.
Well, they made him so colorless. Like, his skin and his suit are almost the same color. And they're not white. They're gray. And that's what kind of is so... He looks almost ghoulish. But it's all looks, because the man, there's no reason to believe that he's any kind of a creep or he's weird or anything. It's just the way they presented him was so colorless, and he never smiled. He had a very real monotone voice. He was, yeah, he looked almost like a Boris Karloff type character.
Yeah, it's true. That's interesting too. I mean, that's where, I mean, I feel like you can deep dive into anything. But I feel like I could write a book about Super Cub, despite how thin it is, because it's such an odd thing where the scenery, like we were noticing the whole time I was showing you, like, oh yeah, see, look, that's just like the burner in my Airbnb. That's just like the weird microwave here. That's like, everything is the same. There's the clothes hanger. Like, it's all so realistic. Like, the basketball, the backboard is dirty, because it would be in real life. They didn't pretend that it wasn't. There's a power lines everywhere, because it's like that in Japan too. You have a beautiful view, except there's power lines everywhere. So they tried to make the setting as realistic as possible, but if anything, they made the characters unrealistically dour. Like, what is wrong with both of them? But then you'll see this character we meet in this episode, she's kind of more like a real person. She's a little more normal. But it is an odd artistic choice, kind of, to just be like, not only is this going to be a very low-key, calm show, but we're going to bring it down even more. These are going to be some wet blankets.
Yeah.
And I don't know quite why they did that, but they did. And it's, I don't know, it gives it an interesting flavor.
Like, usually in most circumstances, people find a little bit of lightness and they have a little laugh, a little joke. She smiled once in that show. She was driving on the road and you just saw a little hint of a smile. But for the rest of it, she was just as down and blue and quiet and morose.
And again, yeah, it's like they never explain what is the deal here. Where does her money come from? What happened to her parents? You just have to infer. But that's kind of neat, too, because, I mean, I tend to infer the worst. You know, I figure, like, she must have got money because her parents were horrifically mangled in an accident at the zoo or something. But it's not a lot of money. It's just enough. I don't know, but they never explain. Oh, I guess the one more little moment, because again, I don't know if we'll come back in after this, probably not. We'll just watch the episode ourselves. But another little moment is how she got spooked when she was driving home because a big truck went by really close to her. And then that night she hesitated to go out on her bike because she remembered how much that freaked her out. And I just love little moments like that too, because that happened to me in Toronto with a bicycle. That's where, like, I didn't realize at first, I was bicycling quite a bit around Toronto, And that happened to me once. I was going, if you go east-west, it's not that bad, but if you go north-south, there's just no room for bikes. And a big bus went by and was like within inches of murdering me. And it was terrifying. And then I just kind of gradually, over the next 3 or 4 weeks, stopped bicycling. And now when I look back, it's like, well, that was why. Because I hated that so much. It was so scary. I was like, fuck that. I'll just walk. You know, this is not the right city for a bicycle. So even just little moments like that, like, it's so much more relatable than, oh no, the super megazoid evil guy has a giant laser pointed at the earth. Like, who gives a fuck? I don't understand why anybody cares about stuff like that. Where these shows about little things, I'm like, ah, oh, dude, I've been there. I felt that one. Definitely my preferred style.